come to order. It is the 24th, no, excuse me, March 21st, 2005. Representative Seaton, Representative Samuels, Representative Wilson, Representative Wyrock, Representative Moses are present. Today we're going to take up continuing oversight hearings on taxes that have existed in the state and that presently exist. The tax that we're first going to take up was the what was called the education tax that was repealed in 1980. It was implemented in the late 1950s in Alaska. There has been some talk aperiodically, as we can see by some of the information in the packets that we have, that this tax has come up for consideration and potential implementation off and on. And most recently, in the 23rd legislature, Senate Bill 137 was introduced that would have imposed another employment tax on education of $100 basically a head, which would be essentially a income tax. Anytime anybody made more made an income, $100 would go towards a tax called an education tax. And it would, we did not have dedicated funds in the state except for the permanent funds, so the money would flow to the general fund and then theoretically be appropriated out for education. Philosophically, some think that's a good idea to have an education tax in the state, because then it would give all people who work here a vested interest in our education and say they do pay a tax, because right now nobody pays any taxes in the state except that they live in a locality that has an income a sales tax or a property tax. But an individual employment tax would vest people in the state of Alaska for education. That's been sort of a philosophic background for some of the for reconsidering the employment tax. We have today to testify on the employment tax in terms of what the potential income to the state would be. Mike Williams, Department of Natural Resources. Oh. Mr. Williams, are you here?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Williams, you're with the Department of Revenue.
That is correct.
Okay, Mr. Williams, if you give us your name and your affiliation and go ahead with your presentation, please.
Thank you. Through the chair, my name is Mike Williams. I'm an auditor with the Department of Revenue. And the basic background on the education tax, as the chair has already stated, it was has been around since statehood and was repealed in 1980, along with the repeal of the personal income tax. At its in the last 2 years of that tax's life, it generated $2.5 million in 1979 and $2.6 million in revenue in 1980. And by just way of comment, those were also the highest years or the most amount of money that the tax ever did generate in its life. The Senate Bill 137 in the last legislative session proposed reinstating an employment tax for education. It would have been $100 imposed per working person or self-employed person once gross wages exceeded $1,000, and also that the individual had to be 19 years of age or older. According to the Department of Revenue's fiscal note, that in the out years that would have generated about $39 million for an operating cost of $1.1 million. There also was a House Bill 236, in that same legislative session that was similar. That was sponsored by Representative Wilson, and it was similar. There were just slight variances, and so if you looked at the fiscal note for House Bill 236, we were projecting in the out years revenue of about $43 million at a cost of $1.1 million. And like I said, the difference in revenue there is just slight interpretation, slight differences in the way the legislative language was drafted. I believe the committee also had some questions about the economics of the of then and now as far as what the, and I believe the committee was provided with a chart showing the effect of inflation on the $10 over the years. There is the education tax was $10 in 1960. Had it remained in effect and adjusted for inflation from 1960 through 2004, that $10 would have been adjusted upwards to $49. If we look at the $10 in 1980 when it was repealed, even if that number had been adjusted for inflation to present, then we're talking about $19.50. And to put that in context of what the median household income was at the time, in 1979, according to the U.S. Census Bureau, the median household income in Alaska in 1979 dollars was $29,585. If that number had been adjusted for inflation through 2004, that equivalent median household income would be $63,555. However, if you look at the U.S. Census Bureau, median household income averaged over the last 3 years, that's available data, that's 2001 through 2003, the median household income in Alaska is only $55,143. So you can see that the median household in Alaska as it stands today at $55,143 hasn't quite kept up with inflation. It's about a 15% differential between had it kept up with inflation as to what it truly is. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions from the chair or the committee.
Okay. Any questions? Thank you, Representative Wilson.
I just have a comment. When I was going over this last night, I noticed that the old law had a penalty in it, and the penalty was 100 times what the the tax was. So the tax was only $10, but the penalty was $1,000 if they didn't do it. So I thought, and none of the bills that were at least introduced had a penalty in them. If they, none of them said, well, what would happen if they didn't pay it? So I just thought that was very interesting and maybe something we need to look at if we would ever do that. Otherwise, if there's no penalty.
Through the chair.
Yes, Mr.
This is Mike Williams again. If the education or employment tax were reinstated under Title 43, we do have under Title 43, Section 5, is the general administration section, and there are penalty provisions within that section. So, and we had worked with the sponsors of the bills on both SB 137 and HB 236 that we had written some other non-payment provisions into the later drafts of those bills, because we were aware that any employer withholding this money is doing so on trust as a trustee on behalf of the state, and so there were some provisions to mirror the employment security tax provisions to safeguard the money being remitted to the state.
Yeah, Representative Wilson.
I do recall that now. And the penalty was on the employer.
Correct.
Yeah.
All right. What was the per person tax in SB 137, Mr. Williams?
$100.
And same in 236?
Correct. In 236, there was a slight variation in the sense that it was a percentage once your wages exceeded $1,000. It was, so that way it wasn't, once you hit $1,000 and $1, you were immediately paying $100. It was actually a percentage of that each incremental dollar until you hit the $100 withholding.
And in the bill, or the statute that was repealed in 1980, it was a $10 per person tax?
Yes.
Was there anything related to the $1,000 threshold?
Not to my knowledge.
All right. And so accounting for inflation, that $10 is worth $49 in 2004?
Yes.
All right. Representative Seaton?
Yes. And I presume then that the if we were looking at reinstituting the $10 fee from 60 updated by inflation, that would give us half the amount of the 43 or 39, so basically $20 million. And I presume that the the cost would still be about $1.1 million to implement it. Is that right?
Through the chair, that is correct. The administrative costs are pretty much a flat rate regardless of the volume, whether whether the tax brings in $20 million, $40 million, or $60 million, the operating costs are still relatively flat.
Right.
In other words, it takes a certain amount to administer this program regardless of the level of revenues.
Representative Samuels.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the first page of the bill, it's compensation, and it's got a definition of compensation, but it's still unclear to me. Does compensation also include the permanent fund dividend?
Through the chair, Representative Samuels, no, it does not, but it does. It would include income from self-employment.
Thank you.
Representative Wilson.
I think the reason that we didn't include the permanent fund was because there's a lot of people in the state that that permanent fund gets used for other things. You know, if they owe back taxes somewhere else, or if they owe fines in courts, or if they are behind in child support, those funds go to a lot of other areas, and so we decide not to include that.
Okay. Any further questions from the committee? We did have at least one person. There are some folks in the audience listening, but there was one person who was here to testify. I wasn't planning to take testimony, but Mr. Beck from Delta Greeley is online, and I thought, you're here.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, Mr. Beck. I'm sorry. Go ahead, identify yourself for the record, and welcome. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Dan Beck, and I'm superintendent of schools in Delta Junction. And I wanted to thank you for allowing me to testify. I happen to be here, and it's great to do that. And briefly, what I'd like to do is support SB 137. As a resident that was here, the first 4 years I was here, I paid the $10 educational tax. And then also as a resident of the REAA, or the unorganized area of the state, there needs to be some way for us to start to pay some of our own fair share, and this is sure a good way to do it. I know that in Delta, over the last couple of years, we've had hundreds of people from out of state also that have come in and reaped huge salaries and left the state with those dollars. But the pressure is on us to educate and train not only in the K-12 system but post-secondary to prepare a workforce. So I encourage the committee to move this bill forward.
One thing, Mr. Beck, is we don't have a specific bill in front of us right now. What we've done and chosen to do is look at the scheme that was in place at statehood for education tax, and then there were two bills, Representative Wilson's bill and Representative Stevens' bill, or Senator Stevens' bill that was introduced last year that we've looked at again this year in our role as sort of an oversight committee on fiscal policy and tax policy. And what the committee may do later this session is choose to introduce the bill as a committee bill and then move that forward. So what we'll do is take your testimony as a sign of support for an education tax,
yes,
and then deal with that later as a committee.
Okay. Great.
Yeah, Representative Wilson.
I have a question for Dan. You are, your school district is an REAA?
That's correct.
Okay, so that you're in support of it even though you are.
And even if this was online in Delta Junction, I would say that most people in Delta would be in support of reinstituting some kind of tax
okay.
in that respect.
Okay, Representative Seaton.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I was just wondering whether you also read this. I mean, these would not be funds that would be dedicated back to the district where the personnel was hired. Is that your understanding?
That's
as well?
My understanding.
Okay.
I'm not dedicated into education necessarily either.
Yeah.
Thank you. You just like the idea of a tax called education tax.
Or I'm sorry?
What is it that really appeals to you about this?
Well, it's a way that, you know, there's been a lot of controversy over the unorganized area not doing anything to pay for services or primarily education. And this is a way to even out that playing field a little bit for people in unorganized areas to kick in some to the state for those services we receive.
I see.
Okay.
All right, I understand that. Any further questions, Mr. Beck? Well, thanks, Mr. Beck, for being so serendipitous to be here at the time we're bringing this bill up.
Thank you.
These bills up. Thank you. Anyone else who wants to testify? Okay. All right. Is there any more testimony on this issue, this component of potential fiscal or tax policy? All right. Any more comments by the committee on this one? Okay. We will move on then. Thank you for coming, Mr. Beck. Thank you, Ms. Cowan and Ms. Gifford, for listening in. The next thing we were going to do is move to another chapter in our short history, and that is to review the taxes we have on natural resources in the state, which are non-oil and gas initially. And there is a mining license tax that we have. And a number of materials have been generated by members of the committee, as well as the Department of Revenue, on mining taxes. Is there anyone with the department who can join us to start the dialogue on this? Representative Corbis? Commissioner Corbis, did you have any? Okay. We're joined for the record by Representative Roper. Yeah, he's here. Hi, Commissioner, how are you? I don't know if that chair feels too low. I think you can adjust it up if you wish, but otherwise.
Fine, thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Bill Corbis. I'm the Commissioner of Revenue. On my right is Brett Freed, who's an economist with the Tax Division. I wanted to make a brief statement about the mining license tax. This administration has heavily supported mining. We're doing everything we possibly can to encourage the development of new mines and to keep existing mines that are in operation continuing to operate. We are not proposing any changes to the mining license tax. We will acknowledge that the revenues that are received from the mining license tax are minimal when we look at the overall state revenue picture. But there are other considerations. Mining provides other forms of taxes that do not go directly to the state coffers. They provide employment and other aspects, which others will describe following me. In any event, the administration proposes no changes in the mining taxes. And I'd like to now turn it over to Brett Freed, who will talk about mining as well as other natural resource revenues. And we also have in the room Deputy Commissioner Al Clow, who is with the Department of Commerce and Economic Development, and he will talk a bit about the economic spinoff of mining. So with that, I'll turn it over to Brett.
Thank you, Commissioner. I just wanted to let you know and the public know is, again, that this committee does not have a specific proposal to raise taxes on the mining industry before it. We do take the charge to look at revenue seriously, and mining is an important component of Alaska's economy. And we felt it incumbent upon the committee and the public to look at this as, in an oversight fashion in terms of what its contribution to the economy is and what its tax structure is. And so in that context is what we are doing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And as I say, Mr. Freed and Mr. Clow are prepared to comment on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any comments or questions of the Commissioner before we move on? Representative Seaton.
I just guess I had one, and that is that, I mean, it seems like every major industry we have in the state is a vital contributor to the economy. I mean, if we look at fishing, it's been the largest employer for a long time, and yet we're not saying that we should not tax the fishing industry because it has spin-off employment. And I'm just hoping that it throughout sometime during the presentations, and if you're not prepared right now, that's fine, that we get to some kind of a comparison of spinoffs and capital intensiveness or whatever those comparisons are, because what I'm concerned is that we're looking at industries differently, not because they have different economic impacts, but because they have different political realities. And, you know, that it seems to me that that's our job. So as we go through this, I would like to wrap that up in the presentation.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, thank you. We'll see how our testimony comes out today, and if we have not answered your question to your satisfaction, we would be happy to come back and have further conversations before this committee.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Loper, do you have a...
I'll pass.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Commissioner. Mr. Freed.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Brett Freed. I'm an economist with Department of Revenue. I was just going to start just as a general sort of overview on natural resource revenue sources. There are essentially three sources of revenue that come into the state. Those are taxes, rents and royalties, and then what I'm going to call other revenue sources. With taxes, you have the direct taxes on natural resource businesses. That would include the fisheries business tax, the fishery resource landing tax for statewide taxes, as well as there are local taxes, local fish taxes. I believe even the Denali Borough has a local severance tax on mining. And then you have the corporation income tax. That's a tax that subchapter C corporations pay, so essentially your large publicly traded corporations. And so natural resource corporations that fall into that category would pay the corporation the corporation income tax, and that's just a statewide source. And then you have indirect taxes. That's taxes on purchases made by natural resource businesses and their employees. You would have, for instance, motor fuel taxes would be an example of that. That would be statewide. You'd also have local taxes that would fall in that category, such as sales taxes and property taxes. And then, of course, we have rents and royalties. Those are paid by businesses located on state land. You have other revenue sources, which would be, like, for instance, charges for services, fines and forfeitures, licenses and permits. Then I wanted to move to a couple of tables here that we prepared that I think all the committee members have in front of them. One of them is the statewide Alaska fish revenue table. This just breaks down the revenue into its component parts, the fish taxes, and now this includes the amount that would be shared to municipalities. Under the fish resource taxes, we have the salmon and seafood marketing taxes. In fiscal year 2004, those brought in about $5.3 million. You have the salmon enhancement tax at about $3 million, dive fishery management at $0.2 million, the fisheries business tax at $29.2 million, the fisheries resource landing tax at $6.9 million, for a total of fish resource taxes of $45 million. Now, some of these, for instance, the salmon and seafood marketing tax and the salmon and the salmon and seafood marketing taxes are customarily appropriated to the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. The salmon enhancement tax and the dive fishery management are customarily appropriated to qualified aquacultural organizations. And then you have the 50% share on the fisheries business tax and the fishery resource landing tax. Then you've also got the corporation fish income tax revenue. So what that is that's for corporations. So for that's subchapter C corporations that fall within the fish industry. And in this case, that would include the, for instance, the fish processors would be included in there. In fiscal year 04, that's $3.2 million. One thing on this is that this is based on information taken from actual original tax returns as filed. So this $3.2 million would reference calendar year, would mostly reference probably calendar year 2002, although there may be some calendar year 2003 in there as well. For a total fish tax revenue of about $48 million. And then you'd have other fish revenue, and this wasn't meant to be, you know, completely inclusive. I didn't put charges for services, for instance, are not included in here, or fines or forfeitures. And this licenses and permits, that's the licenses and permit revenue that goes to the Fish and Game Fund. And then I also included the test fisheries amount, and that, so the total other fish revenue comes to $25 million for a total fish revenue of $73 million.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Some of this is taxes that the fishermen themselves have asked to be taxed because the state wasn't paying for some of the, you might say, testing or research to go into what areas could be open at certain times. So some of this was, they requested it because if the money wasn't there, then those areas, at least on the biologist would say, okay, we're going to stay on the conservative side here, because if we don't, we could be at a loss in the long run. And so do you know what percent of this was self-imposed, or at least they asked the state because we weren't funding some of these areas?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I'm not sure in terms of the licenses and permits or test fisheries, but the salmon enhancement tax and the dive fishery management, those are both self-assessed.
Okay. Yeah, Representative Seaton.
So looking at this in the 04 numbers, we have the first three. Salmon and seafood marketing taxes, salmon enhancement, dive fishery taxes, those are basically self-assessed, appropriated back. Then we have the next two, the 29.2 and the 6.9, and 50% of those are shared by statute back to the local community. So to the state revenue, the total of those two then is 36.1, so basically 50% of that is $18 million comes into the treasury from the fishery business tax and the fishery landing tax. And then you'd add to that the 3.2 from the income tax, and you'd come out of what, 21.2 or something like that. So basically just over $20 million, $21 million actually comes into the state general fund itself in 04 from fisheries taxes, excluding licenses and permits and test fish. Is that right?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, that is correct.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative.
Along that line, is there other local taxes that are incident to fisheries assets or revenues that aren't shown here? In terms of the total government take type of thing, and maybe even Representative Seaton could help us with that, I'm not sure.
Yeah, maybe the Department of Revenue, but yeah, both Lake and Penn and Kodiak, and I'm not sure about Unalaska, have severance taxes on fisheries resources up to 7.5%, I believe, in Kodiak. Representative Moses can tell us about Lake and Penn, but yeah, that's a significant tax burden that is placed upon the fishery industry, and that's on the gross. Yes.
Through the chair, Representative Roekberg, I think I provided this. This is from Alaska Taxable. It's the 2004 municipal sales tax, special tax, and revenues, and that shows all the different raw fish taxes that are levied in the various communities and the amount of revenue that's brought in for those from those taxes. It does not show, you know, what the property tax, any sort of property tax or sales tax contribution that would be made by the fishing industry.
Mr. Chairman, for example, is there personal property taxes or other taxes on, like, boats or fishing equipment that might be a low take, too? Are they exempted, or I don't know?
Through the chair, Representative Roachberg, I'm not sure. I would imagine that would depend on the community itself, but I'm sure there are local property taxes that are paid by the fishing industry.
Mr. Chairman, this is a very, very helpful exercise, very good. Some of these things I've seen for just the first time here this morning after 11 years down here, but I think that's what the committee is kind of looking for, I think, is looking at gross government takes and where they're going in these various industries to see where the incidence of the overhead burdens and the taxation hits. If we might want to follow up on that further down the track, I think it would be very helpful for the whole state to understand what's going on. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. While we're paused here, any further questions? You have Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You've got the total of what Alaska takes here. Do you also run numbers on the economic impact, particularly in fishing and particularly in the state of Washington? When they take our fish, what do they get out of it? You know what we get out of it now.
Through the chair, Representative Samuels, no, I don't have that information.
Does the department do anything? Senator Cantwell told us the other day that the people of Washington are all in favor of us not developing natural resources. And I'm just wondering if the people of Washington know what they get from our natural resources, and if they don't support other natural resources, what's going to happen to them when we start target shooting other industries? So I'm just curious if the revenue looks at the implications for other states. You know, what do we give to them?
Through the chair, Representative Samuels, we have not done an economic analysis of the fishing industry or its impact on Washington State.
Okay. Thank you.
Except for maybe the cities of Seattle's existence, but for Alaska.
On that note, 80%, 87% of their refineries, or 80% of the oil in Washington State's refineries come from Alaska also. Thank you.
Senate Representative Seaton.
Going back to this chart for a moment, I'm seeing that, you know, a whole lot of areas have a 2%, you know, like Alaska, Aleutians East Borough has 2% raw fish tax. But I look at Kodiak Island Borough, and it has a 9.25 mil severance tax. Is that the fisheries tax there? And I don't see it labeled as fisheries.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I believe that's timber and fish.
Timber and fish.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, does that mean, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Roachberg?
If you land the fish in Kodiak, you have to pay that tax, and you can land it down in Alaska and not pay that tax? Yeah, that's kind of, wow.
Through the chair.
Representative Seaton.
Yeah, that's correct, except Alaska has a 2% raw fish tax. And, you know, but if you landed the fish in Wrangell or in Yakutat, city or borough would be a 1% tax. And, you know, if you went to St. George, it wouldn't be anything. If you went to St. Paul, it'd be 3%. And that's on the gross value.
Curiouser and curiouser. I wonder how that affects the natural marketplace. I don't know.
All right, Mr. Fried.
The second chart, or the second table that we prepared, says statewide Alaska mining revenue. And this chart was prepared on a calendar year basis, and the reason was that most of the information on this chart comes from a different table that I believe members of the committee should have. And that's a table that's was prepared by the Department of Natural Resources and the Department of Community Commerce and Economic Development. And just to go through this, the resource taxes, that they include the mining license tax, We had in calendar year 03, $1 million in revenue from the mining license tax. You might know in fiscal year 04, it was $3.2 million. Commodity prices have been very strong. Rents and royalties in calendar year 03 at $3.9 million for a total mining resource taxes of $4.9 million. The reason why I didn't put a corporation mining income tax revenue down in calendar year 03 is because of that what I was talking about before, which is the sort of timing issue on corporation income taxes. Although we have the filings from fiscal year 04, most of those tax returns reference then 2002. So we'd have to go back to calendar year 02 where the revenue was about $300,000. And then in other mining tax revenue, total other mining revenue about $1 million. Material sales, that's gravel, sand, I guess rock, and then other fees. So material sales about $900,000 and fees $100,000 for $1 million for total mining revenue of $5.9 million for calendar year 03. And that's all I've got.
Yeah, Representative Seaton.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you explain material sales?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I believe material sales are for sales of gravel, sand, and rock.
It is, through the chair, are you meaning that if somebody's building a road or something and the state has a resource and the state sells somebody a material, then that's where this 1.8 is?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, yeah, I believe that's right. That's
okay. Thank you.
Yeah, Representative Roper.
Chairman, we have the it's one page by the Alaska Department of Revenue Tax Division. You just gone over, but I noticed that attached to the back of the corporate non-petroleum corporate income tax is another page here that titled Alaska's Mineral Industry 2003 Special Report and Table 25. There seems to be a little bit of variance. And what's really interesting, I think, on the bottom of the second page, which I direct the committee's attention to, is there's about a $1 million differential here. If these are calendar years or fiscal years, this one in the second sheet here, because to make it consistent with the other one, number one, and because it says $5.9 million, but then there's other things included here, perhaps. Or I guess maybe that total mining revenue, I guess that would be consistent. But it also says $10.5 million of payments to municipalities for $16.4 million. So is that correct, through the chair?
Through the chair, Representative Rochberg, the $5.9 million matches out with the chart, but the $10.5 million is payments to municipalities. So that's not included in this table. So that would just be sort of your local taxes and other, you know, payments to municipalities from the minerals industry.
Mr. Where is this from? Is this a DOR? Or?
Yes, this is from this report here. It's Special Report 58, Alaska's Mineral Industry 2003. It's Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys in cooperation with Office of Economic Development. A Division of Mining, Land, and Water.
So am I assuming these are calendar year numbers then?
Those are calendar year numbers.
Thank you, Representative Roper. Representative Seat.
Yeah, you know, I just find it a little curious that we're taking material sales and putting that in a tax category because...
It's always been there.
Well, I'm just talking about what we're... You know, the way we consider this, I mean, that means we should consider ice sales to the fishing industry as revenue if there's a, you know, local or state, you know, we do have some ice houses now that we're financing and those kind of things. So that would be as if that's revenue to the state when all it's doing is, you know, it's actually a sale of something to, because to an industry. So I just, I find it curious that we have it in there as a
revenue.
Well, in the consideration of taxes, I mean that's what we're talking about here is the consideration of taxes, and this is actually a sale of an item, a sale of surplus property, we might say, to an industry, and I don't think that we should be counting or considering it. I'm not saying that it's wrong to have it there, but I think we need to look at it that the sale of something to an industry doesn't mean that it's a tax on the industry. And so I think that we should just keep that into consideration. Thank you.
Is that a correct analysis, Mr. Freed?
Mr. Chairman, I should say other mining revenue instead of other mining tax revenue. Sorry about that, but that and I also included other fish revenue, but I didn't have any sources for revenues such as that. This material sales comes from this DNR table, so I had that as a source. That's the only reason why it's there, and there isn't something necessarily comparable on the fish sheets.
But there is something to that, where the fishing industry, the expense to the industry, say, of buying ice is as under the mining table where material sales, say, if it's buying drill bits, which are essential part of mining, is that an orange and orange comparison or what?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think so. I think that this is the sale, so you'd have, the way I'm understanding it, somebody from DNR would be better, but this would be the sale of gravel from state land.
Okay.
So it would be like selling timber off state land.
Ripson Roper.
Right, it's like a severance tax. I mean, if we're going to have a statewide severance tax on fish like they do on Kodiak, then I'd buy the argument. Otherwise, I don't. I mean, it's a source of revenue to the state and always has been considered that.
Mm-hmm. Well,
Representative Seaton.
And Mr. Chairman, I agree. It's just not a source of, it's not a tax revenue. I mean, what we're doing is selling them, we're selling them something. We're selling them, and I think mainly this is gravel to build roads. And when we sell a state resource, that's not the same as a tax. And I mean, unless we want to consider every time that we sell one of the fishing patrol boats here or something, and then all of a sudden we're going to consider that as fish tax revenue. And I don't think that should be fish tax revenue either. And so I just want to get a clarification there. And I think, you know, maybe DNR can come back to us and clarify what that material sales is.
Yeah, we have some folks that can talk on this further. Any questions for Mr. Freed? Mr. Freed, do you have additional testimony?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Thank you.
No further questions? Yeah, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question. You said that at the very top of this mining license tax, where it says mining license tax revenue, and you said it had really increased quite a bit this year for 2004, and it was up to 3.2, and that was because of increased values of minerals, or what was the reason that it had increased so much? Was it increased because there was just more mining going on, or was it because the prices were up?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, the prices of minerals have gone way up, gold, silver, and zinc.
Okay, Representative Seaton.
And just one more question. I was trying to compare the 02 numbers here, because that's the one we have the corporate mining tax for, with the table number 10 that we have under estimated mineral production in Alaska. And we have that total of $1,012,000,000. And so, I don't think that we had this same table on fisheries, and I was wondering if we can get that as well from the department so that we get some kind of comparison in tax rates versus the value of the raw product. Appreciate that.
Thanks, Mr. Freed.
Thank you.
Okay, without what we'll do now is we'll take Al. Did you want to come up now?
Yeah.
Well, how about Mr. Clow, then Bob Leffler, and then Rich High? And that'll take us up to the top of the hour. So first, Mr. Clough, if you could come forward, give us your name and your affiliation, your testimony, please.
Thank you, Chair Wyrock. Al Clow, Deputy Commissioner, Alaska Department of Commerce. I just want to kind of paint a picture here that sort of captures what the mineral industry is in a little more detail, other than just the tax revenue that is a number and really not debatable. First of all, we have included data in the handouts on the municipal revenue, predominantly by property tax. And those numbers somewhat speak for themselves. The Red Dog is a negotiated agreement of about $5.7 million. Northwest Arctic Borough does not have a property tax, obviously. Northwest Arctic Borough would not exist without the Red Dog Mine. Fairbanks North Star Borough, over $4 million in direct tax revenues from the mine. And I'd also point out that the mine receives quite a bit of services up there. The one issue in regards to Fort Knox and True North that is not included in the tables is that the residents of, the customers of Golden Valley, because of the power consumption of the mine, which is at a high commercial rate, knocks down the overall power cost for residents in that area. It's about 7% reduction in power bill for a residential customer, and it worked out to, I think, about $3.75 million in power cost reductions for businesses and residents of the Fairbanks area. Here in Juneau, Greens Creek pays $300,000 in property tax to the borough, and I would point out that Greens Creek is not in the roaded area of the borough. So we get quite a bit of benefit in Juneau without having to put out a lot of municipal services. A couple things that are worthwhile of pointing out in regards to the mineral industry as a whole. The current operating mines in the state, major operating mines, Red Dog, Greens Creek, Fort Knox, and True North, Usabelli Coal Mine, are all within existing boroughs, and of course, Northwest Arctic Borough would not exist without the Red Dog Mine. The Pogo Developing Gold Mine north of Delta is the driver for the current discussion of the formation of the Delta Borough. That chapter is yet to be written yet, but that's certainly what is driving that borough discussion. When you're looking at the minerals business, I think there's a couple dates that are absolutely critical to understand. Red Dog Mine was the mineral deposit was first identified in the late 1960s. That did not go into production until 1989. The Greens Creek deposit was first identified as existing by exploration in the early 1970s. That did not go into production until 1989. Fort Knox was identified as a good exploration target in 1984. They did not start production until 1987. And Pogo, exploration was going on there in the early or mid-80s. The actual discoveries at the site were made in 94 and production scheduled for 2006. Probably more instructive to put things in the current perspective, the Pebble Copper Gold deposit out in the peninsula that's receiving so much press these days, that was discovered. The exploration started in the early 1990s. Earliest production from that would be 2010. Donlin Creek in the Upper Kuskokwim, similar dates, discovered in 1990, potential production 2010. Kensington here in the Juneau Borough, the initial modern exploration started out there with the Placid Oil in the early 1980s, and their earliest production would be about 2008. And to, I guess, cap the opposite side of the minerals business in the state of Alaska, the Alaska Juneau Gold Mine, modern exploration for that area, started in 1984, culminated with closeout and abandonment of the project in 2000 with $130 million invested. The Quartz Hill Molybdenum Project down out of Ketchikan, the exploration discovery down there made in 1974, the abandonment of the project in 2000, correction in 1990, following over $100 million investment. The mineral industry will tell you it's different from other resource sectors in the state, and I believe that is a valid assertion, and these comparisons kind of point that out. From the department's perspective, what we see with the development of more large-scale mines in the state are associated family wage jobs and economic engines to drive regional government formation and operation. Red Dog, Northwest Arctic relationship, the obvious one. The current discussion on borough formation in Delta very much anchored about what's going to happen with the Pogo mine and the potential revenue stream there that that presents for that region of the state. And with the ongoing exploration out at Donlin Creek on the Middle Kuskokwim, that has spurred very serious discussion of regional government formation by way of the residents in that region. We view that as a very positive thing for the state. And I'll note that I think when I walked in here today, you were having a discussion on potential school revenues for the Delta Borough. So that kind of captures some of the salient points about the minerals business. And I'd be happy to entertain any questions.
Thanks, Representative Roper.
Mr. Chairman, in the past, legislature has enacted certain incentives to try to get mineral development in the state of Alaska. From your unique perspective, how effective have those been, and what kind of what impact do you think that has on the state revenue stream because of those incentives?
Representative Roper, through the chair, I would suggest that the most effective incentive that the legislature and the administrations have moved forward in the last few years are the geophysical exploration programs, where the state has funded airborne geophysics, got that information out there in the public domain. Those fairly modest investments on the order of several hundreds of thousands of dollars per appropriation cycle have immediately resulted in claim staking, which the state has seen revenue on, and exploration in those high prospective areas. There's a good tie there that we can show if somebody's interested in following the data trail. Some of the other incentives by way of the bankable mining license tax. Better be careful here. I'll get my incentives confused. There's several other incentives out there. It's a good story, but it's a more longer term payback, I would suggest. Getting the good data out that competes, allows us to compete with other regions in the nation and the country, I think, has been arguably the best incentive that the legislature's moved forward. The tax breaks and such are certainly beneficial, especially the phase in of the mining license tax, which has been on the books for a long time, in recognition of the high startup cost of these projects. I think Donlin Creek is looking, Pebble is looking at $1.5 billion to bring that operation online if they move forward. You know, all these business sectors are different. We don't play one off against the other. They all have their own unique attributes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Follow up, Representative Roper?
Yeah, just right. I think it's been the policy of the state and the legislature in the last several decades, maybe since the territory was founded, that we wanted to incent mining activities in the state of Alaska. And I think it's really quite important to have an understanding of this if we're going to be looking at taxation that may impact our prior public policy and then shift that public policy and looking at it in that context. So you have to take, I think, a more macro, broader view of things.
Representative Wilson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I heard you correctly, you mentioned the fact that you think that because of some changes that have been made in the past couple of years, that there's been more interest in getting permits and all that. Am I correct in understanding that?
So far, yeah.
Okay. Follow-up then?
Yeah, Richard.
So I know it takes many years from the fact that they start in until they can actually have production. So just in a rough ballpoint figure, how many years do you think it'll be before we will see some increased production if those pan out?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, I mean, you go through the data on the recent large mine projects in the state, it's a 15 to 20 year cycle from actual discovery through exploration, development, and then into production. There's been a few flyers that are a little bit shorter and a few that are quite a bit longer. We're on a cycle right now, of course, Pogo coming online this next year, hopefully Kensington going into a construction phase next year, and these others kind of moving forward, and there's other exploration projects out there happening today. The dynamic that the industry is really facing is Alaska geologically is a very good place to be. Alaska cost of exploration, development, and discovery is not the best place in the world to be, and there's a lot of data to show some of our challenges. Most of these mineral deposits are in areas of the state with limited, if any, public infrastructure. So a large development has to shoulder its burden 100%. Fort Knox being a good example of how it worked where there was public infrastructure close by. The public got a heck of a direct benefit out of that and by way of a reduction in your power cost. But the average lead time is every bit of 15 years from discovery to production. And the minerals price, we know, is very cyclic, as are many resource prices. What the industry really needs to encourage and maintain its level of incentive or level of interest in Alaska is stability. There is a system in place right now, a taxation system both at the state level and the municipal level, which is predictable and gives someone the opportunity to run those numbers and their analysis when they're trying to look out 10, 15 years down the road before they could actually see a return on their billion-dollar investment. If we lose this level of certainty, it is a large disincentive for this international investment. There are others out there competing against us. I just came back from probably the largest minerals gathering, and certainly in North America, a couple weeks ago, and we are competing against Australia, South America, Africa. We are also competing against developing countries. There's exploration companies looking at going back into Afghanistan right now, and certainly the former Soviet Union. I mean, it's a worldwide business we're operating on, as the rest of the resources. Certainty of what your investment climate is going to be when you've got such long lead times and large capitalization cost is a major, major driver in how these people are going to spend their monies.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rip. Anyone else?
Yes.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. I'm just trying to make heads or tails of this. We've got the latest year we have the corporate tax for, so we have a complete tax picture, is 2002, and we had a total mining tax revenue of $3.9 million. And that is, according to your table 10, on over $1,012,809,000 of extracted mineral value. And, you know, I'm just trying to figure it out. Now, I don't mind some kind of proposal where we're talking about delay of taxes, but, you know, the administration came in saying that we're going to develop our resources, and that's going to give something to the state treasury. And what we've got in our tax structure here is, even when things become, after they're developed and everything else, there's no time at which we ever recoup to the state basically any revenue at all from a billion-dollar extractive industry. And I'm just trying to figure out, I mean, is that the position, is that we should maintain that, or is there some way that we can institute a system that has some time delay until production is going and those kind of things, or is it just we should leave it the way it is?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, I think you need to look a little harder at that number, and we're kind of caught up in a marketing corundum here, if you will. The way that table is laid out, that is the gross value of, excuse me, all the dollars in the mineral resource. That does not necessarily equate to the dollars that were paid to the mining company once you factor in their extraction cost and their debt service, et cetera, et cetera. I will note that I think it was, this is aught six, you're going back 4 or 5 years ago. At that time, Red Dog showed a $28 million operating loss for the year. Their gross value of the metal still looked, was a big number, but they lost $28 million digging it out of the ground. Rich High is here from Greens Creek, and I certainly he can speak very well to their issues. But I'd note that after startup in Greens Creek in the late 80s, due to low metal prices, they were forced to close their doors for 2.5 years. The corundum that we're in there with the table is we're capturing the gross value of the of all the metal and the dollars that are spent on the industry, which helps highlight the attractiveness of Alaska for a place to develop a mineral or to a place to explore. But it is not compared to the actual cost that was or the value that was paid to the mining company and whether or not they made any money. We are a high-cost producer as well. If you'd like, I'm sure we can provide you some, you know, more details drilling into those equations. But if you just look at the number, yeah, it's a big number, but if you start backing out what it costs to achieve that number, it is not necessarily that lucrative of a business.
Representative Seaton?
Yeah, and I guess what I would like to do is see some proposals from the administration that does what we were all expecting, and that is resources, you know, contributing something to the state treasury. I mean, we're talking about large developments. I mean, Pebble is, you know, right there where my district is. And yet what I'm seeing from the testimony here is that no matter what the size of that mine is going to be, we're going to be looking at, you know, oh, gee, $3.9 million. We were talking about a school tax a few minutes ago that was $39 million. So we're talking about the largest development, and I think the largest mine in North America, and all the other mines, and we're going to be getting somewhere like 10% of what a head tax on, for education is going to be. I just would like to see some kind of program where, as things go forward and we extract huge quantities and value of resources from Alaska, that the state treasury receives something, and I'm not seeing it in the current structure, and so that's my problem, and I hope that they would come back with some ideas for us.
Yeah, Representative Roberts.
Mr. Chairman, I think we ought to do the same thing for all our natural resources, and particularly that which has not produced much in the way of revenue over the years and our biggest employer and everything else, that's the fishing industry. Yeah, take a look at that.
Well, the dire cast here. we're going to get a couple of folks more in here. Any further questions or comments, Mr. Clow?
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Bob Leffler. You're online, sir.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead if you have any testimony or comments, Mr. Leffler. Identify yourself for the record.
For the record, my name is Bob Leffler. I'm the director of DNR's Division of Mining, Land, and Water. I think that most of the issues have been very well covered. I would just like to add 2 points. The first is that mining is the mining taxes are net profits taxes. They were established that way when Alaska became a state, because at that time people really understand the cyclic nature of the industry. Over the last couple of years, metal prices have been at a historic low. As a result, mines that were permitted at $400 gold and built with the expectation of $400 gold, frankly, lost a lot of money when gold went to $250 an ounce. So over the early 2000, we basically had mines in the state losing money. It's not unexpected that as mines lose money, net profit taxes don't give you a lot of money. As gold prices recover, I think that you'll find that the mining license tax and corporate income tax do recover, and I think that you'll see 2004 being a much better some better returns than earlier years. That was the first point. The other point is that mining is a very relatively small industry. We have less than 3,000 employees and really only four operating mines of any size, that being Red Dog, Greens Creek, Fort Knox, including True North, and Usabelli. So they pay on the order of five thousand, not those mines, but the industry as a whole, pays states and municipalities on the order of about $5,000 for every employee in the industry. The large mines, which pay most of it, probably pay close to double or more than that per employee. And they pay that mostly in good years and bad years because, in fact, the real focus of the mining industry and the fiscal structure of the mining industry has been to ensure that they support the local municipalities in which they operate. And I think they do a good job of that in high prices and low prices. So those were just the two points, really. The size of the industry is very small at the moment, and that the state revenues, though not the local revenues, are really cyclic depending on mineral prices because they're net profits. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Yeah, Representative Wilson. Thank you, Mr. Bleffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have Table 12 in front of us that gives us the average metal prices, and it goes to 2003. And I know that's probably just a table that you had somewhere that you could pull out. Could you get us what those prices were for 2004?
I certainly can get those to you. I can tell you that today, in fact, if you look at the Anchorage Daily News and most papers, you will have them. But gold prices today are roughly $430-some per ounce.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Leffler. Any further comments or questions of Mr. Leffler? Thank you, Mr. Leffler, if you could stay online.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Finally, we have Mr. Rich High, one person who is going to represent all of industry.
No pressure.
Mr. High, if you could give us your comments and identify yourself for the record and your affiliation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's a pleasure to be here. My name is Rich High. I'm here representing the Alaska Mining Association, the Council of Alaska Producers. I'm general manager of the Greens Creek operation. Steve Burrell sends his apologies. He would be the best person to be here to speak, but he is at a meeting in the lower 48. I think I could just open by saying that the previous speakers have covered just about everything that I wanted to cover from my point standpoint. So I'll try and run through those, you know, fairly quickly and then be available to answer any questions. But I would like to add a couple of comments. As a previous speaker said, we are a small industry. There are only four major mines in existence right now. But it's an exciting industry. The present administration, the legislature, and the regulatory agencies have done a lot in the last few years to support the growth of natural resources in Alaska. The comment was asked about Mr. Rookberg asked what has been done in some of these areas. A couple of other areas that I would comment on to answer that question is the streamlining of the permit process that has occurred in recent years. The existence of the large mine permit process in DNR, where most of the permits are handled through one agency, has done a lot to help the streamline the permitting process. And from Greens Creek standpoint, and the permitting of the tailings pond expansion, we're an example of where that process did work. Exploration is expanding. Metal prices are higher, has been stated. You know, Pogo will be producing next year. Kensington is moving along. Donlin Creek, Rock Creek, you know, Pebble and others. These are mines of, you know, of the future that can add value not only from a tax revenue standpoint, but from a job standpoint and from a community involvement from a, you know, property tax standpoint. The mining industry is not a high return industry. Mining averages about a 5% rate of return. It's not a lucrative business. I think as miners we tend to be a little bit more optimistic than we are at the end of the day when the mining operations come into play. As was stated, it takes many years to bring on operations. Some don't go through. We're an example of that with Quartz Hill and the AJ operation. It's an extremely capital-intensive industry in that process. As an example, Greens Creek spent over $130 million before production. They've spent $360 million, including that $130 in capital work since the beginning of production. Red Dog spent over $370 million before the first bit of zinc was produced. There's a lack of infrastructure in the state, and some of these dollars are spent to develop their own infrastructure where other states already have that infrastructure in place. Mining, it's not always been profitable, as was recently pointed out. It's a cyclic industry. Metal prices go up and down. We're experiencing a time period of good metal prices at the moment. It's been that way for the last 2 years. We hope to see it stay that way for a longer period of time in this cycle because of the growth in China, possibly India following that. From a profitability standpoint, over the years, Greens Creek, in 14 years, as was mentioned earlier, 2.5 years of shutdown also, has been only profitable in 7 of those years, and more recently has been profitable because of metal prices. Red Dog, 11 of 15 years. The mining industry is willing to and should pay their fair share of taxes in the state. I apologize for correcting Mr. Clow, who mentioned that Greens Creek paid $300,000 in property tax in 2003. That was just one of the property taxes, either real or personal. We paid $700,000 in property taxes. We need a stable tax climate for us to consider developing our operations in Alaska and making the decisions to going forward. Because of the cyclic nature of the mining industry, we always hopefully add jobs, community involvement, but the profits aren't always there. And that's why, from the standpoint of the industry itself, very capital intensive, high operating costs, that a net profits tax is the best way to go and helps an operation consider their development when considering an operation in Alaska or anywhere. It's a tremendous contribution to the community with high wages, has been pointed out, good jobs, you know, local taxes. And I think the rest of my comments have already been covered. So I think with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll entertain any questions if there are any.
Representative Roper.
Hi, Mr. Chairman. Mr. High, how do Alaska's environmental standards stack up internationally? And what kind of cost impacts do those standards have on operations in this area?
I think from an environmental standpoint, from internationally, I think our, you know, obviously from a federal standpoint, they're similar to other areas. From a state standpoint, I also, you know, speaking as an operator, they're quite intense. We have a lot to do as far as maintaining our adherence to environmental requirements and standards. I would probably put them up against other states and more stringent in some of the other states that I have worked at. Some of the things upcoming, for instance, looking at taking over state primacy for the for water discharge, the NPDES program, is probably the right thing to do because the state can handle it better than EPA. So I think that from an environmental standpoint, we are equally as stringent as other states. I will speak to Greens Creek to answer that question specifically. Over and above the permitting process of, for instance, our tailings expansion or those kind of things, our operating costs attributable strictly to adhering to environmental requirements, not the operation side of that, but personnel and monitoring, those kind of things, exceeds $2 million a year.
Just to follow up, does your firm have any international operations? Or I was speaking more in the terms of international.
Oh, like international.
Former Soviet Union and other areas of the world that don't have the requirements that we have.
Yeah, Mr. Rokeberg, through the chair, our firm does operate internationally. We're part of the Kennecott operations in the United States as well as part of the Rio Tinto organization worldwide. And because of our size and our desire to maintain sustainability in the industry worldwide, we administer one set of environmental standards throughout our corporation. So we will be more stringent in than the regulations in developing countries. We will, you know, equal the requirements in, you know, in the countries elsewhere.
Mr. Chairman, just to follow up, I'm really curious about the fact that you mentioned the commodity pricing. You know, clearly, the minerals industry is a commodity base, but all of our natural resources in Alaska, from timber to fish to oil, they're all commodity-driven and all price-sensitive. But such things as environmental controls and other constraints on business that have an impact on investment decisions. I mean, it's kind of curious here about the comments made today regarding the investment environment in Alaska regarding minerals that sounds so much similar to the petroleum industry. I guess you care to comment on the fact that we are in a commodity business and that these other price factors or cost factors can make an impact? Or is that too broad a question?
I'm Mr. Rokeberg, through the chair, I'm trying to think of your question. I'm not sure I understand the question, other than...
I'm not sure I did either. So. Yeah. With all due respect.
We'll right. rescue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Myself.
Mr. High, did I hear... I thought I heard you say that even though you're international, that you use the same standards in other places of the world that you do here, even though they don't require that? Is that what I heard you say?
That is correct.
So do, this is just a question, doesn't have anything to do with Alaska, but do those countries appreciate that? Do they even realize it?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, I believe they do. I don't want to speak specifically to our company as compared to the mining industry and, you know, in Alaska, but I would expect that those countries do.
Do you think, follow up?
Yeah, sure.
I mean, do you think that it that you will possibly be able to do things in other countries that other mining companies won't because of that?
If Representative Wilson, through the chair, if you're asking me to make a plug for my company, for Rio Tinto, we would like to be the developer of choice.
Very. So, I'm sorry. Just one more question.
Representative Wilson.
So is that unusual? When you look at all the mining corporations as a whole, do they all kind of do that, or are you guys?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, I believe that that you will find that all of the major mining companies in today's world, you know, operate in that manner.
Right. Thank you. Greens Creek is on federal land, is that correct?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, yes it is.
And can you explain to us a Net Island royalty and how that works and how it compares with our mining license tax?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, we pay
just
the...
Mr. Is it a Net Island?
Net Islands Royalty.
Net Islands Royalty. I'm sorry.
Island Royalty.
Okay. It is it's essentially the same as a net smelter return. But in comparing it, we do pay the 7% state mining license tax on federal lands, just, you know, similar to all the other operations in the state. The net island return or a net smelter return is what the U.S. Forest Service would charge on extraction of minerals that are not covered under extralateral rights on our operation. and that is also based on a profitability or it's based on a value of the of the minerals and profitability, similar to the net smelter return or to profits tax.
Follow-up. Thank you. So the net island royalty or net island return is then based on the basically the gross price of the minerals less certain expenses such smelter transportation.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Correct.
And if the mine was on state land, how would the net island royalty that you're paying now to the federal government compare with the what you would have to pay to the state?
No, we would.
Or do
still,
you know that
we would still pay the 7% mineral license tax, but because we are on federal lands, we do not pay the 3%, you know, additional license tax. I can't remember the name of the tax, but the additional 3%. And so, therefore, it depends on what the metal prices are. Similar on the mineral license tax as to whether the net island royalty tax would be paid.
Okay, and I guess, Mr. Chairman, what I'm trying to find is a kind of a equivalency about what we get as far as royalties on state land versus what the federal government gets from royalties within this state on production and federal land. And I think that that, you know, I'm not sure where that is, but I think that we probably should understand that before, you know, before looking further.
Into Representative Seaton, through the chair, Greens Creek has not paid any net island the net island royalty tax, forgot the name of it, but the to the Forest Service at this point in time.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Representative Roker, you have your hand up.
No.
Further questions of the committee? Well, thank you, Mr. High,
thank
for coming
you,
in today. Anybody else who wishes to testify from the administration? All right. Well, we have no further meetings this week. And we'll continue our overview next week when we come back in session until the very end. And I think the committee is not going to meet. We're going to shut down so we have time for end of session, and that doesn't get in the way of closing out the whole session. So, but we'll have a final calendar, I hope, by the end, by next week for the next series of meetings and what we're going to talk about. Okay? All right. Adjourn.